Clark Wagner versus Diane Louise Wagner. And who will be arguing for Dr. Wagner?
Your Honor, I will carry Greenberg. Ms. Costell is also present, but
all right.
She's my law partner.
And Mr. Greenberg, I mean, I'm sure you both know this, each side has 15 minutes to argue the case.
Yes, sir.
And as appellant, would you like to reserve a portion of that 15 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, sir, I will. 5 minutes.
All right. You have that 5 minutes, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Now I'm ready.
May I please the court? Again, my name is Kerry Greenberg on behalf of Dr. Wagner. At the heart of this case is rather simple facts. In a divorce proceeding between Mrs. Wagner and Dr. Wagner, which concluded in 1999, there was a painting that the parties owned that was worth about $250,000 that the parties had received from Dr. Wagner's grandmother.
Can I ask you then why it was not separate property? Dr. Wagner's separate property, it was his grandmother's.
That's not what the court found. I think it's a good argument, Judge, and then if I'd been the trial lawyer then, and if it's possible to convince Judge Alden, that would have been nice. It would have made it easier, but that's not how she found it.
Right.
Simply put, Dr. Wagner wanted the court to decide the disposition of the property. Dr. Wagner wanted the court to assess it, decide who should get it, either him or his wife, and or neither of them, and sell it, and they would split the proceeds. But at some point, he wanted the controversy to be decided by the court. Mrs. Wagner decided that she did not want that to occur, so she put together a scheme to defraud. And just quite simply, she decided she was not going to submit that painting to the court.
I think anybody could reasonably disagree that in this case that there were some issues regarding honesty that needed to be resolved. But it seems to me that, at least the trial judge, the case turned on whether or not there was a determination of whether this was extrinsic fraud or intrinsic fraud, which, as you obviously are aware, have different standards for deciding a case. I think your better case is made if it's an extrinsic fraud. It makes it easier for you. Why was the trial court wrong in the determination that it made as far as saying that it was intrinsic fraud?
Because of the activity that occurred outside of the courtroom. Because of the lying, because of the scheme to defraud, which was hiding the painting in another jurisdiction, and not just simply that she lied in court. It was both the activity, the actual action of hiding the asset, and then lying about it in discovery.
Is that a question of fact or a question of law?
Whether or not it's extrinsic fraud or intrinsic fraud, that's a question of law.
The issue of the lying.
I think it's a matter of law. Because, well, I would say this. I would say it's a matter of law because the Supreme Court of Virginia decided where there was somebody lying in a Texas court to talk about assets. The Supreme Court of Virginia decided that that lie out of court in deposition was extrinsic fraud. So I think as a matter of law, I'd submit to you, Judge Alston, that the lying out of court, the conduct out of court, is as a matter of law extrinsic fraud. The distinction between the two, if you look at the unpublished cases or the circuit court opinions that have been published, I would admit it's a squishy distinction between intrinsic versus extrinsic fraud. And the federal court finally just abandoned it. They decided that that's just not a rule that's sustainable. Intrinsic fraud has got to be, I would submit, intrinsic fraud is lying in court plus. Extrinsic fraud is also lying in court or lying out of court plus. Both of them kind of meld to the center. If you're simply lying in court, and that's all it is, which would be perjury, I don't know that even is intrinsic fraud. In this case, the court found that it was intrinsic fraud, but that you couldn't attack it independently, that it had to be only by appeal. I'd submit to the court that if that were the case, there is no such thing as intrinsic fraud, because there would never be an appeal of intrinsic fraud. That's really just credibility of the evidence. Once the case is closed down, you would say the other person lied.
There's case law that says it is, that perjury is intrinsic fraud.
Right, and that it's attacked on appeal. And I can't think of a way that could actually occur. I realize that all the courts say that there's two ways to attack it, either on appeal, which I don't know what case that was. I haven't seen one published or unpublished, or by independent action. This case was conducted through independent action. It wasn't a collateral attack. Judge Kasabian of the trial court found that it could only be attacked, it is intrinsic fraud, but that the method of which we used to attack the judgment was incorrect. That is, the only way to attack a judgment would be by direct appeal. And since Dr. Wagner didn't appeal, he therefore forfeited his right to attack the intrinsic fraud.
Didn't Judge Kasabian also say that there were other things that Dr. Wagner could have done, a motion to show cause, or an action in indemnity, or something like that to try to recover the painting or hold Mrs. Wagner in contempt if she did not explain what it was.
During the course of the divorce proceedings,
right.
he did. So, Your Honor, so if I could, I'm going to now go back into the extrinsic fraud category because that's where he felt that made a difference. And that had to do with the due diligence Dr. Wagner did in order to find the painting. So the argument had been that he didn't do enough. So what he did was this. In fact, the argument has been that she was a better hider than he was a seeker. So what did she do? What did she do? Normally what we do is we look at all, we think of the best interrogatory questions we can. We say, if there's an asset in your name or in the safety deposit box or someone else's name, but you have an interest in it, we think of these creative questions to try to ferret out that information. But what about if someone's going to lie? Then there is no question you can ask. So in this,
I think the step though that Judge Kasabian took in the case, and I could tell from what I read in this case, that he really struggled with trying to figure this thing out because he didn't want to credit in any way what Ms. Wagner did. He felt that it was wrong and that it should be addressed. But I got the impression from reading everything that his determination came down to the fact that he believed that at the time that this was being litigated, Dr. Wagner just didn't care about it. And so since he didn't care about it, he didn't follow up on it. And since he didn't follow up on it, that's his responsibility. That's his negligence. That's his lack of taking reasonable care to pursue the objective. So therefore, he's a loser as far as that's concerned.
With regard to extrinsic fraud?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. That is largely what he found. However, I think he's misapprehended his own decision-making in this way.
I think that term is like that, the Roger Clemens misremembered thing. recreate a word.
What Dr. Wagner did was he asked for a right to inspect where the property was last located, and went to the property, but she'd hid it in a place outside the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth. He asked for a motion to compel her to produce it for inspection. The court entered that order. She disregarded the order. He asked her for it in interrogatories, and she lied and said it was given away. He asked about it in deposition, and then she lied in deposition. He asked about it in the court, and she lied in the court. To say that that's not activity. They asked to keep the case open. Judge Alden said you can't, but there may be fraud on the court someday. I don't know. But he did everything short of what they said was deposing her brothers, or I guess her hairstylist, or anyone else who might have had knowledge of the painting, and hiring a private investigator, which I don't know what that person would have done. Sat outside Miss Wagner's home and waited to see if she went back to visit the painting. Even in the event that we could have gotten an order from the Maryland court allowing him to inspect the warehouse, which I think would be a long shot, but how would he know to look at the warehouse? Could he go to court and ask for any kind of inspection of any place she's visited? When the judge made the determination, Judge Alston, that you just indicated, I don't know what facts he was using. He didn't mention private investigators. Oh, he did say something about contempt. How could one go to a courtroom and ask for contempt if she says, I gave it away, and you say, I don't believe her? So you go to the court and say, Judge, hold her in contempt of court because I think she's lying. I don't believe any court would ever enter an order of contempt.
That would have got you closer to extrinsic fraud, though, because then she would have lied to the court in court and thereby placed the within the province of the court to address it in the more advantageous way for you.
Well, more for the extrinsic fraud. So she would have lied again. But she did lie in court. She lied in deposition. She lied in interrogatory. She lied in her pleadings that were signed. And she did lie, actually, in the court itself. And she
took. Agree that's intrinsic fraud, not extrinsic.
I think that.
The lies.
In court. In court lies, I think, I believe the court law is it's intrinsic. Yes, ma'am. And out-of-court lies or out-of-court activity is extrinsic. So I would ask
the lying under oath, the depositions, for example.
That seems to be a blend because the Supreme Court of Virginia has found that lying under oath in a deposition where you didn't divulge information about asbestos that you knew was extrinsic fraud because it didn't allow the true controversy to get into the courtroom and be resolved. So it's squishy. And the Supreme Court of South Carolina, we've cited a case, Ray versus Ray, where the husband spoke to his employer and said, don't give me the bonus now because I'm getting a divorce. But when the divorce is over, I'll take the money. And the Supreme Court said, when you put in a plan of action that is for the purpose of defrauding and then lie about it, that is extrinsic fraud, and that we cannot tolerate. Because our system requires integrity. And right now, so what Ms. Wagner did is not that she lied in the first proceeding, but when we came to court in 2015, she hid the painting a second time. Again, the painting went missing. Again, she lied in court. Again, she had us put on 3 days of hearing about where she really put the painting. The judge disbelieved everything she said.
Does the record reflect now where the painting is?
It's gone. She said the last time she looked at the painting, and she put it in her mother's home in an attic. In 2012, when she went to go get it, it was missing again. In 2012 is when a letter came from our office that said, We now know that you have the painting. We'd like to resolve it. And then the litigation began, and the painting once again was gone.
If certainly there's case law that says if you keep a witness away or you keep parties away from a hearing, that is more than intrinsic fraud. That's extrinsic fraud. Is your argument in part, well, she kept the painting out of the reach of the court, and so that's why it's an extrinsic fraud?
Yes. She kept the asset out of the court. Yes, that's exactly right.
If, let's say someone, there was evidence on a cell phone related to either a civil matter, divorce, or some other matter, and the cell phone was hidden, would that result in extrinsic fraud?
And the cell phone was hidden, there was a matter, just information? Not necessarily. I think it would depend on the content of the information, the way it was hidden, whether it was part of a scheme to provide information. But no, I wouldn't, I can't, from that fact set, I can't say that would be simply extrinsic fraud by itself. No.
Can I ask you about Judge Kasabian's finding of fact? Because he said on the record, I find on this evidence that his testimony was not credible, that he was seeking the actual painting, that he was seeking the actual painting as opposed to the value of the painting or set off of the painting. What are we to make of that? Isn't that a finding of fact?
Yeah, it is. And although I disagree with that finding of fact, because I think the judge did Dr. Wagner did everything he could, when the court determined that the painting was gone, it became marital waste. And when it became marital waste, he pivoted and then started talking about the value of it. The argument was that he must not really have wanted the painting. I submit that it is like Blackacre. It was his grandmother's. He did want the painting. I think there was ample evidence to show that. But even if he didn't, I don't think that changes the analysis of the painting rightfully should have been brought to the court. It was $250,000 painting. And the court should have decided who got it. And even if he didn't want it, what the value was, that if she's getting it, he's getting a value of $250,000 of some other asset. So even if the judge makes the finding, the disposition, the fair...
I should let you know, too. I
see that.
It's your rebuttal time. You may proceed.
It's most important that I answer your question. So I think that I lost my train of thought. Maybe I concluded the answer then.
I think you answered my question.
All right, fair enough. Thank you, Judge. I appreciate that. I'll reserve for a second.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Thomas Rapsinski on behalf of Diane Wagner. There was nothing Diane Wagner said or did in these proceedings or in the 1999 divorce proceedings was outcome determinative with regard to the alleged wrongs Dr. Wagner complains of here today. As the court noted with its questioning of my esteemed colleague on the other side, what Dr. Wagner failed to do was outcome determinative. There are two tests, two standards which need to be made. Was there a fair submission of the controversy to the court under Jones v. Willard? And then under Charles v. Precision Tune, when seeking to set aside a judgment, did the party seeking to set aside that judgment establish fraud and establish that there was no neglect or fault?
I think you would agree that Judge Kasabian struggled with your client's conduct during the course of his disposition of the case. I think you would agree with that. And made credibility determinations in that regard, saying, I don't believe anything that she said. If we were to adopt the approach that you're suggesting here, wouldn't we be, in effect, be rewarding bad conduct on the part of litigants?
Your Honor, regrettably, no. You would not be rewarding it. What we would be doing was, as Judge Klein pointed out in his Richter decision, when he analyzed this area of the law, it would be a recognition of the value, the superseding value of finality of judgments, recognizing that when a fair submission of a controversy has been given, there may be perjury, there may be wrongdoing, there may be mistakes. We recognize it all the time. Judges get things wrong.
Court process trumps bad conduct.
Court process trumps bad conduct. Finality trumps bad conduct, because ultimately, Dr. Wagner had his opportunity. He had his day in court. What Dr. Wagner testified to again and again is he knew she had the painting. He didn't believe her. He when she said she had disposed of it, he didn't believe her. He accepted that she had it. And they say they were left no stone unturned. They did everything they possibly could, they testified to.
But if we were to look backward and now take a look at where we are now, wouldn't all of these things that you were suggesting that Dr. Wagner should have done been an exercise in futility, because we don't even know where the painting is now, according to Klein?
No. And that's exactly the point here, is because what he was asked and acknowledged, you knew she had brothers. You knew her mother was alive. Children, tenants, employees.
So you're supposed to subpoena every member of her family?
Did you ask them? Did you pick up the phone and call? What we know is ultimately what led to this filing was her brothers came forward, according to his testimony in the transcript, came forward and said, hey, by the way, now seems as good a time as any. We had the painting. And testified, if I had been asked, I would have said as much. He didn't even pick up the phone. So the fact that there was no third-party discovery testified to by himself, by his attorney, there was no effort whatsoever. He said again and again and again, we talked to everyone who we believed would have had any information relevant to... And I said, well, did you talk to her brother Robert, Leonard, Julian? I went through the entire list that I just went through. No, no, no. I said, well, if you talked to everyone you believed had information, who was that? No one, quote unquote. No one. If he so badly wanted this painting, which the court asked whether or not, in fact, it could have been found to be separately his, he didn't argue for separately his. And there was a very good argument, again, which factually it's not before the court, a very good argument as to why it could have been hers. But I would submit to the court that that is part of the point about the fair submission of the controversy. This painting, along with the entirety of a very large and complex estate of marital property, was administered. It was considered in a multi-day proceeding. There were strategic decisions made. His attorney testified. He testified. He made a choice. He made a strategic decision.
How do you respond to opposing counsel's point that this is not just a situation of perjury, that the perjury was essentially the result of a scheme that was orchestrated outside the court proceedings, thus making it extrinsic versus intrinsic fraud?
Interestingly, Your Honor, the court added a word that my esteemed brethren did not include. It wasn't that it happened outside the court proceedings. It's that it happened outside the court. He doesn't take into account the Jones v. Willard test, this idea of the fair submission to the court. Anything that happens intrinsic to the proceedings is part of intrinsic fraud. These questions of what she said in her deposition, things that were brought to the court at trial. The example cited by Judge Kasabian, who went through all of the case law that we presented to him about when is something extrinsic, when is there this inability to have had a fair submission. It were ways that parties were prevented from knowing about a hearing. They were left out of court. They didn't know they had to be there for what ended up being an ex parte proceeding. That was not the case here. He knew what he knew. He had to decide how to try the case. He had to decide whether he was... At the very least, he could have asked for a continuance. Your Honor, we believe she has this painting. It is critically important to me. We would like to continue it. But what Judge Kasabian's findings of fact made clear was it was a strategic decision. And what Yvonne Waite, the divorce counsel, testified to was Dr. Wagner had other more important things like continuing to practice surgery that he decided to focus on. So when he made the decision to seek the monetary value, that was his decision to make. So everything became intrinsic. He could have tried to show she was lying. He probably did. We don't have a transcript of the trial. One of those situations where circumstances were crazy in terms of trying to bring this before the court, but we don't know what was testified to at trial. We don't know other than the ruling transcript that we have. In that ruling transcript, we know that Judge Alden, when she tried the divorce, when she tried the equitable distribution, she said, look, you didn't have an expert on valuation, and well, you had one, but you didn't timely name him. You could have put on valuation evidence. I heard $250,000 today. If we look at the equitable distribution sheets that were presented to the court, the number was somewhere between $150,000 and $300,000, and then it was $60,000 in the earlier version. But what we know is certain assets of his, certain of his grandmother's belongings, he did cherish enough to say, I want that property back. She said she disposed of them, but he still wrote on the sheet, I want that property back. And what I did in cross-examination was show, look at that same page, that same equitable distribution sheet, a line above it, two lines above it. It says, want the property back. But with regard to this one, you put a value. You decided to monetize it, and yet you testified you knew she had it. Just because you couldn't prove, I want to back up, because a question was asked about the extrinsic nature, potentially, of keeping the painting out of court. Keeping the painting out of court did not prevent a valuation determination. That it prevented, much like real property can't be brought into court, it prevented somebody from looking at it. But he has no problem testifying or telling the court here today what it was worth. He put on a hearing. He put on testimony. He did what he could. He couldn't put on valuation testimony with his expert saying it was worth $60, $250, or $300 because he missed the deadline.
Could the timing and missing the deadline have been a direct result of not being aware that she was going to lie about the whereabouts of the painting?
No, because as he testified to from the time she first deposed from, and his counsel, Yvonne Waite Callahan, said at all times she testified consistently. She said, I had trouble believing it. I wasn't sure who I was going to talk to, but at every point in this case, and it was pointed out and determined by Judge Kasabian because he looked at a May 22, 1998 motion, they knew about dissipation of assets from the very outset of the case.
She was consistent, but she consistently lied. So why should this court reward that?
I owe it to Mrs. Wagner to say on the record that whether it impacts the result or not, she maintains at all times steadfastly to this day that she did not lie, she did not perjure herself,
okay,
and that this was truthful.
Findings.
I do, and I understand that we accept those findings,
right.
But I want to say for the record that these arguments, and I started with, nothing she said or did mattered, because ultimately it was the failures of Dr. Wagner to act in a way that said that he somehow relied upon it.
Because the trial judge says, well, he could have hired a private investigator. Dr. Wagner probably
could have
the funds to do so. Why should Dr. Wagner have to hire a private investigator to retrieve a painting that's either his separate property or his marital property? Why should, I mean, so if he were poor, he still should have to hire a private investigator?
It was an example. I don't think that was set forth as a measure of a requisite step that one must take. I think it was reflective of the utter non-actions by Dr. Wagner, consistent with what Judge Kasabian repeatedly pointed out. I don't fault him necessarily for the decision he made not to pursue the painting. It's a very complex case with a whole lot of decisions to be made. But to then come back before the court 15 years later and say, hey, remember that painting, the one that I knew she had?
There's a trigger in that he found out that she had hid it from her brother. It was a trigger for his actions. In other words, what caused him to come forward is that now I have information to suggest. I have hard information to suggest that now I can find this painting. And whenever I think about negligence, and I stay pretty basic when I analyze things, is I think of negligence as duty and breach of duty. And then you got causation of damages. We can set that aside. You're suggesting that Dr. Wagner had some duty to try to find a painting that the trial judge found she had been hiding from him.
Had a duty to take action consistent with his trial strategy. His trial strategy, if it was to get the painting back, his equitable distribution sheet should have said, I want the painting back. His pretrial action should have said, I want this alleged family heirloom that is so near and dear to me. I can't right now uncover sufficient information, but it's so important to me that I am asking for a delay. I have tried everything. Let me recite to the court everything I have done.
What makes you think a delay would have resulted in it appearing any sooner than years and years later it appeared? And I guess to follow up with that question, what other things do you say you concede, really, I guess, that he didn't have to hire a private investigator, but what should he have done? I mentioned earlier to Mr. Greenberg, maybe, why didn't you file a motion to show cause or an action in debt or something like that to get the painting? But if she was going to say she didn't know where it was or that she had given it away at a flea market, what good would any of those have done?
What he didn't do was ask, let alone depose, let alone seek formal third-party discovery. He didn't pick up the phone or even knock on the door of her brothers and those who ultimately testified. If he had asked me, I'd have told him. He didn't ask. And when Robert DeJulian says, he didn't ask me, it points, I think, very directly to the notion that if he had done something as simple as picked up the phone and called, I'm not saying he would have gotten the answer he wanted, because times may have been different in 98 or 99, and Robert DeJulian may have felt differently about his sister then than he did 12 years later when he decided to come forward and make her life living hell. But he didn't ask. So we don't know. We know that through his own lack of action, whether that's neglect or fault, I would say it is, we know that he couldn't then come before the court and say, I don't know what else it is you want me to do, Your Honor, but I've done, this is what I have done. I've done everything. He didn't ask for any relief in that sense, that motion to show cause. Show cause, tell me what you've done that would lead me to think a show cause order would be appropriate. Well, I've asked no one where the painting is. Yeah.
Your time is just about out, and I did want to ask you about, have you conceded essentially that this court has jurisdiction?
I do concede jurisdiction of this court, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you.
When the standards are fair submission of the controversy and the trial court judge finds as a matter of fact after fact after fact, and states again and again from everything he can see from the transcript that he has provided, had before him for his consideration of the post-trial rulings and the bases of Judge Alden in setting forth paragraph 7H of that initial final decree and saying how it is she was ruling on this painting and the disposition of it, the fair submission of the controversy was such that there was a multi-day proceeding, equitable distribution proceeding with asset upon asset, and Dr. Wagner chose to do what he did and to proceed as he did, as set forth in his own equitable distribution sheets, saying, notwithstanding what he testified to, notwithstanding what he's representing to the court here today, Judge Kasabian, as the court here today pointed out, said, I don't believe him. I've heard his testimony. I've looked at his equitable distribution sheets. I've heard his counsel. I get it. I understand why he did what he did. He made his choices, though, and he has to live with them. And under the standard in Charles versus Precision 2, that's where you have the fault or neglect. The failure to establish an element of the cause of fraud itself is also fatal under that Charles the precision tune, because there needs to be reliance. There has to be not only the act, but a reliance. And his testimony that says, I heard her, I just didn't believe her. He took no action in reliance on what she said. In fact, he took no action at all to prove his case. He has to live with the results, because finality is more significant under the circumstances than allowing or rectifying intrinsic fraud. Thank you.
Thank you.
Besides having duties, Dr. Wagner also had rights. And one of the rights that he had was the right to rely on testimony that was given to him under oath. This court held in Wells versus Wells that we have the right, we as litigants, we as lawyers, have the right to rely on what someone says. So if she says, I gave it away in a flea market, or I gave it to a doctor, someone named Mr. Brown, that was a news story that she gave, then as a matter of law, he has the right to rely upon that, because we make people tell the truth. If we can't rely on that, that's a real problem with integrity in our system, because that means that anyone could lie all they want, and then we have to get private investigators, talk to family members. Had Dr. Wagner spoke with the family member, and he did, and the family member said, as it happened in 2015, she actually had the painting, she said, my brother's a liar, and since she already hid it in one warehouse outside the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth, she would take it and hid it somewhere else. Because remember, she's a better hider than he is a seeker. So that game is not sustainable in our system. We say that if you ask the question in an interrogatory, at deposition, under oath, in pleadings, you must tell the truth. And if you don't, you will be sanctioned.
But if we take your opponent colleague's analysis to heart, won't we have a situation where litigation will essentially never end? In other words, I'm going to give you the extreme example. There's all kinds of disclosures through the discovery process, and it turns out that someone did not disclose some significant account, some $500,000 account. Judge goes through and makes his equitable distribution determination. 8, 10, 12 years later, oh, goodness gracious, she had a $500,000 account that should have been part of this proceeding. We want to come back in and litigate that issue. And let's assume for the sake of my example that we don't have the classic situation where there's any overt lying. She just hid it and nobody knew about it. Doesn't finality of judgment sort of suggest that you can't come back in and attack that asset?
Yeah, I think it depends. I think if the person took a bunch of diamonds and put them in a safety deposit box and lied about it or put money in offshore and lies about it and has a scheme to defraud and then subverts the process and prevents the court from knowing any information that turns out there was a jackpot somewhere, they should have to look over their shoulder and that should come back and haunt them. And if everyone in the system knows that hiding will eventually not win the day, then the system will work better. Because lawyers will make sure that their clients are truthful. I think they do anyways. But the clients will be forced to be truthful. They won't say that if I could just get away with it, if I could wait the 21 days, I'm home free. They should never be home free if they have a scheme to defraud and they're willing to lie at every single stage of the proceeding under oath in courtrooms. Then they get caught. No, they should suffer the consequences of that. And the consequences that wasn't a good decision. That's what, and it should not only should the asset be disgorged, but then you should pay costs, legal fees. And this court has done that on many occasions. I have seen several unpublished opinions. I want to quickly, I know I've only got a few seconds, with Reliance, Dr. Wagner should have had the right at least to ask for the painting. It should have been brought before the court. And if Judge Alden had known that she was hiding it, she wouldn't have disallowed his experts. She would have found her in contempt of court. There would have been, if we knew, as you said, Your Honor, if we knew then what we know today, there would have been different decisions by Judge Alden, and it wouldn't have been a decision to stop him from having testimony about the value of that painting. If she knew then that what was happening is she was hiding it in a place in Maryland. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Greenberg. We will brief counsel, and then this court will take a brief recess.